So the title of the talk that we have in the session on modelling and behaviours is Gini coefficients for sexually transmitted infections, measuring distribution and infection among individuals with different sexual activities. I'm giving this talk, with my colleague Sandra Steiger, and I'm going to do the first introductory bit just to set out the playing field and the initial part of what we did, and Sandra is going to carry on with the really smart bit. So I wanted to acknowledge the fact that this work is done by us at the University of Bern, together with our colleagues from the University College London, Pam Sonnenberg and Kath Mercer, who run and have analysed the NATSAL study, and those are the data on which our presentation is based. You may very well be aware of the Gini coefficient and the Lorenz curve. These are used in, largely in economics, and they show how unequal the distribution of income is in a country. And that's what that was their first use. And Lorenz developed this graphical way of showing the cumulative distribution of... which is the pointer? Okay. This behind this here is a curve, which is called the Lorenz curve. If everything was equally distributed, they would be lying along this line, and you count up the cumulative distribution of a quantity, in this case for economics, it's income, and then how much the share of that group has, and you get up to 100%. And the more unequal the distribution, the more steeply curved is this line. And Gini, a few years after Lorenz, found that you could represent this as a single number that gives a summary of that income exposure and how it's distributed in the population. Now I'm going to try. There we go. Okay. So having done this for economics, Lee wrote a paper in the late 1990s showing how this measure could be adapted to an epidemiological situation. And then several groups have actually done this for sexually transmitted infections, mainly concentrating on the distribution geographically of sexually transmitted infections. And this group in Canada showed for both chlamydia and for gonorrhea, and comparing over time what the Gini coefficients were and the Lorenz curves were for chlamydia and gonorrhea. And you can see from this graph that the Lorenz curve for gonorrhea is more steep than it is for chlamydia, showing that gonorrhea is more heavily concentrated in a small group of people than is chlamydia. And then looking over time, for chlamydia, the Gini coefficient increases a bit over time, suggesting a slight concentration of cases of chlamydia in a smaller group of people, but for gonorrhea, nothing changed. And so this shows you how you can use these coefficients. We then use this to look at that taking the exposure as the number of partners, and then looking and seeing how the distribution of chlamydia was based on this National Survey of Sexual Attitudes and Lifestyles, which is a large UK survey, which these data come from the survey that was done in 2000, and show you how partners are distributed over the past year, showing that most people have one partner, a few have more partners. And then we use these data to compare. The black line is the line from the observed data about the distribution of chlamydia. And we use these as a kind of diagnostic tool to look at how various mathematical models were performing. So these two look like they perform quite well, whereas this model is showing a much more concentrated distribution of infection. So based on this initial experience of using the Gini coefficient, we decided that when the third National Survey of Sexual Attitudes and Lifestyles was published, we would look at the larger number of infections that have been examined in that survey and look at Gini coefficients using, again, the number of heterosexual partners in the last year. And then we were able to compare chlamydia over the two surveys done in 2000 and done in the last couple of years. So I'm going to present those data very briefly, and then Sandra is going to carry on and show you how we interpret those and use mathematical models. The data set I'm showing is the data set of National Survey of Sexual Attitudes and Lifestyles, and essentially what we're concentrating on is the STI test results in 4,500 of these for chlamydia, mycoplasma genitalium, and type-specific HPV infection. We couldn't do gonorrhea or HIV because there are too few positive samples to actually use observed data for those. I want to just briefly show you that these are the data for the each of the infections. This one, the curve in the bold red, is for chlamydia, and this looks very, very similar to the curve that you saw actually for the distribution by geography, which is quite interesting. Mycoplasma has a curve that's similar, but maybe slightly less concentrated, and these are the HPV infections that become, for some of them, are very, very close to this line of equality, showing that they're basically equally distributed amongst the population. What we found when looking at these data is that there's a lot of statistical uncertainty here. You have few observations and actually relatively few samples altogether. So this is for chlamydia, and this shows you that here we can generate a confidence interval that actually for mycoplasma genitalium, although the line looks less concentrated, the confidence intervals overlap. And really, there is a difference, though, with these HPV types, showing that these curves are actually much flatter, but it just shows you the uncertainty in the data that we're dealing with. The last one I want to show you is that we compared NAPSAL 2 done in 2000 with NAPSAL 3 and showed that the Gini coefficients for these two periods actually didn't change at all over that period of time. So my summary is that we think that there may be some suggestion that Gini coefficients for chlamydia and M. genitalium are higher than they are for HPV, and we didn't see any change over time for chlamydia. So I'm going to hand over to Sandro now.
Thank you very much, Nicola. So I now have the pleasure to take you through the second part of the presentation, in which I'm going to link this exploratory analysis of Gini coefficients with mathematical modeling ideas. And the objective of that is to see whether the Gini coefficients can actually tell us something about the biology or the epidemiological parameters of the STIs. We've seen Gini coefficients are a measure of the concentration of infections in a population. These ideas are not new. When you go to the literature, you can find, for example, the core group concept, which goes back to the late 70s. In the very interesting and relevant paper for what we did, we found here in 1990 the Branham and Plummer paper, where they tried to make inference about the core group size by doing some or using some results from mathematical modeling. They used this equation here, which actually was derived by Anderson and May, which links the basic reproduction number, R0, to a product of the transmission probability of the infection beta, the partner change rate C, and the infectious duration D. And Anderson May also showed that for an infection to stay at an endemic equilibrium, R0 must equal 1. So Plummer and Branham said, okay, let's put this equation equal to 1, solve it for C, then you get this relationship here. And that now means that you have a relationship that links the biological parameters, beta and T, to the behavioral constant or behavioral parameter C, the partner change rate. And they compiled a list, so that is a screenshot from their paper, where for a list of infections, they collected estimates of the infectious duration and of the transmission probability beta. Now, this is hard to read, so let's focus on two lines. For gonorrhea, they came up with an infectious duration of 0.15 years, transmission probability of 50%. That would mean the partner change rate they get out of that to stay at an equilibrium would be 13 new sex partners per year. And this you can now interpret like a threshold for the core group, so to speak. The core group would need to have at least this activity level. While for chlamydia, you have a larger infectious duration, lower transmission probability, you end up with a number 4 here. The larger this number here, the smaller the core group tends to be, right? In a population, it would not be possible to have a very large proportion with such a high activity level. So we see from this calculation that gonorrhea seems to be concentrated much more than chlamydia. So you see that is very much in the spirit of the Gini coefficients. So schematically, what we have here, we have the biological parameters, and Pranam and Plummer then derived statements about the core group. Now we start at the other end, at the Gini coefficients, and we are wondering, could we go back? Obviously, with only one unit of information, one entity, the Gini, you will not be able to go back. So we need to add something else. as we did this work here, what you realized is when we add prevalence and we have a mathematical model, then we will be able to go back. And I'm going to show you how to do that in the remaining time. So that is the starting point in terms of the data. So we have this space spanned by prevalence on the x-axis and Gini coefficient on the y-axis. Prevalence is somehow a measure of the overall burden, and Gini is then a measure of how this overall burden is spread across the population, right? And we can plot, using the Natsal data, our infections in that space. Now we need a mathematical model. This is described here on that slide. We use the deterministic population-based model, so it is essentially a set of ordinary differential equations which describe how people move between compartments. An interesting point or an interesting feature of the model is that we matched the sexual activity groups exactly to what we have observed in the Natsal 3 dataset. The activity groups were defined by the number of new heterosexual partners in the last year. So in the model, we reflected exactly these groups, the number of groups, and the proportions within each of those groups. Then when you do that, if you have a given set of parameters, the model has unknown parameters, so for a given set, you can plug that into the model, turn the handle, and what you will get is proportions within each of the risk classes. That's this plot here. And you have also the dashed line, which is the population prevalence. So we have prevalence within each of the risk groups and prevalence overall. That is what you need to calculate the Lorentz curve, which is here, and that is what you need to calculate the Gini coefficient. So with the model, when you have a given parameter set, you will get one point in this space, prevalence, Gini. Now, obviously, you can find a parameter value or select a parameter value such that you will match your observed data point. That's where it's really we start bringing the data and the model together. So for chlamydia, for example, we have a data point here, and we have a parameter combination which matches this point exactly. But now you can go one step further. What happens if you start changing your parameters? So if you increase infectious duration D, what happens? You would move down that way. So prevalence would increase, but Gini coefficient would decrease, which is somehow intuitively, which makes sense intuitively. If people stay infected longer, kind of the spread across the population is more equal, so you go down that way. However, if you keep everything else fixed, but change transmission probability beta, then you would be moving that way. Only prevalence would be increased, but the way this burden is distributed across the population would not change. And that we found quite nice as a finding. Okay, so now you can still go one step further and do that for a lot of parameter combinations, and what you will end up with is a new coordinate system, so to speak. So you can have, or you have your initial plane, you have prevalence and Gini coefficient, you have your data points in that space, and on top of that, you construct, using the model, a new coordinate system, which is given here by the dashed lines. The horizontal lines will be the lines of constant infectious duration, but changing transmission probability, while the anti-diagonal lines here are the lines with changing infectious duration, but a constant transmission probability. And now you have your data points, and you can start comparing their biological parameters using that new coordinate system. For example, we see that the viral infections here seem to have longer infectious durations than the bacterial ones. And maybe more interestingly, if we compare chlamydia with mycoplasma, we see that to go from chlamydia to mycoplasma, infectious duration needs to increase and transmission probability to decrease. Now, here, clearly, we need to say we need to interpret that with caution. This is exploratory, and we've seen that the sampling uncertainty of these points is very large, both in terms of the prevalence, but also in terms of the variability, the uncertainty attached to the Gini coefficient. You can start thinking about control interventions as well. If you would, for example, implement something where you increase testing and treatment of chlamydia, that would mean that the infectious duration goes down, so the points would move up here. If you increase the use of condoms, for example, that would block transmission probability, so the intervention would, or the point would move over here. That means if you have an intervention, it may be that the Gini coefficient would not change. That doesn't mean the intervention doesn't work, it just means it acts on transmission probability. So to summarize that, we've seen Gini coefficients can be a useful and interesting proxy measure where we can combine epidemiological and behavioral data. It is relatively easy to calculate, right? You have straightforward survey techniques, and then you can calculate these measures to make inference on biological parameters, which are inherently difficult to estimate otherwise. As a downside, it requires large sample size. You've seen the uncertainty is big, even for a data set like NATSAL, which is probably the best of its kind. And also, we should note that the exposure measure, that is a selection of the modeler. Say, we used here the number of new heterosexual partners in the last year. If you were to change that, you would get different Gini coefficients. So there's not just the Gini coefficient, it is really a selection depending on the exposure variable. But applying that, we already found that modeling seems to suggest that mycoplasma might have longer infectious duration and smaller transmission probability than chlamydia. So maybe these two are less similar than we initially thought. Thank you very much for your attention.
My name is Martina Akram from the University of Rochester and the Monroe County Health Department. I'm an epidemiology student. So I'm curious as to see how treatment factors into the model.
Well, at this point, not at all, right? At this point, we're trying to relate the prevalence and the distribution of that to learn something about the transmission probability, for example, or infectious duration under a stable situation without treatment in that. Into the model, you could, of course, add a treatment effect. So for the mathematical model, you would have additional parameters that would act on, for example, infectious duration or whatever. So you could include that into the model. But do you assume that we have a stable situation here without changing effects?
Hi, my name is Lauren Young, and I'm with the Arizona Department of Health Services. I'm a gonorrhea epidemiologist there. And with a lot of the population-based data that we have, we don't have a lot of behavioral or social characteristics that go with our infection numbers. So in order for us to do some type of calculations like this for our more specific, say, for example, race-ethnic disparities that we see where we've already seen literature supporting ideas of small social sexual networks that are responsible for large infection rates that you see, despite the fact that they don't necessarily have the infection numbers that other race ethnicity groups, what type of information could we potentially use to make a model like this and apply it to our situation?
That's a really great program science question. What I think is very useful is if you collect at the time of making the diagnosis small amount of very important information. So I think if you were going to collect two variables for gonorrhea, you would want to collect, was the infection transmitted through sex between men? And then something, a sexual behavior variable, which may be the number of new sexual heterosexual or the new partners in the last year. And then you would be able to relate your data to this kind of calculation.
Thank you.
We have time for one more question, if anybody has one.
Sure, Mr. Mishra, Imperial College in U of T. That was a fantastic talk and really clever work. It's really interesting. So I just have two questions. And one is about mixing between the different risk groups. So looking at that.
Yeah, sure. There is a parameter for mixing of the groups. So on one hand, the risk groups mix, but also they are redistributed each year. That does play a role a little bit. We tested sensitivities to that by just trying out a lot of different parameters, and the global picture is robust, is quite robust. Okay. Obviously, it does play a certain role also if you change the model structure in itself a little bit. That that has some effect. The kind of the big picture, that seems fairly robust.
Okay.
but we need to do more work to have a much deeper analysis of, in terms of the sensitivity. We did some, but that needs to be done more extensively.
Thanks. And just my second quick question. When you saw the differences in the Gini coefficient with the different infections, so HPV and whatnot, did you also look at how age played a factor into that, so sort of restricting by broad age groups?
For HPV, we didn't see differences when you stratified by age groups, when you stratified by gender. So for HPV, we tried to find a picture where you see differences, and we didn't actually. But it, you know, the uncertainty is quite big as well. We need to acknowledge that.
Thank you very much.